Welcome to Perspective Transformation with Marty and Friends. Whether you're looking for encouragement, practical training, or clear focus, you'll want to grab a notebook, as today's guest trainer shares rock-solid strategies you can implement starting immediately. Sponsored by WomenSpeakers.com, here's your host, Marty Swedberg.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Perspective Transformation with Marty's Friends. I'm here today with Shannon Topkin. And we're going to be talking about comparison, and this is a huge issue for all of us, boys and girls, but mostly girls, I think. Shannon's new book is No More Comparison Girl, and we are going to be talking about thriving in the you that God created you to be during this hour. Grab a notepad of some kind, because we're going to be talking about the dark side of the comparison game, why Satan counts our comparison as a win. Early references to women comparing themselves to other women or to others in the Bible, the surprising solution to comparing, and it isn't just stop comparing, the difference between living by the lines versus living by the spout, a new perspective regarding the comparison trap, the definition of me-free living, and what the disgust factor challenge is and why it's so important, how flipping the ruler helps us when we become judgmental of others, and how to live on the healthy side of both pride and comparison. So a lot of these things are unfamiliar to me, as they are, I'm sure, to you. And we're excited to have Shannon here with us. She's an author, blogger, speaker, and she loves God. She loves to blend her gifts of humor and storytelling with her passion for the truth of God's word. And she's here with us today from her website, shannonpopkin.com. Welcome to you, Shannon.
Hey, Marnie, it's so great to be with you again today.
I'm so excited for your new book here, and so needed. This is a huge issue for all of us, this comparison thing. And I think why I believe it's a huge issue for everybody, because I don't sit around comparing myself to people hardly ever. However, it comes so naturally. It like just will show up, right?
Right. Yeah. You're not setting out to try and compare yourself. You just find yourself doing it. It's not
exactly
something
it's
you were anticipating, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And if you try to stop, you maybe even start doing it even more.
Yeah. So you talk about the dark side of the comparison game. So maybe start back with, what is the comparison game, first of all?
Well, you know, I think it's kind of ironic that we call it a game, don't you? Like, we kind of minimize it and talk about it like, you know, we laugh. We're willing to own it a little bit. But there is a dark side to this thing that we have with comparison. I think that our enemy thinks of comparison as a strategy of war, because listen to the words of James 3, where James is the pastor of the Jerusalem church. He's Jesus' brother, and he is sending this letter out to Christians who are comparing themselves with each other. There are new churches popping up all over the place, and James says to them, if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, this is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. And so see how Pastor James kind of ties together bitter jealousy and selfish ambition with the agenda of our enemy. You can't be jealous without comparing, right? And, you know,
right,
without glancing sideways and looking at somebody else and wishing right you had what they had. And you can't be selfishly ambitious without also glancing sideways and comparing. And so comparison is sort of like the little trap that leads us into this wisdom from below. You know, it's interesting. James says, this is not the wisdom that comes from above. This is not heavenly wisdom. This is the wisdom from below, where our enemy is constantly feeding us this lie, saying, you have to measure up. Look at her. She's getting ahead and you're not. Or look over at her and you're getting ahead of her. This is the wisdom that our enemy feeds us, because he wants for us to fall into this measure up agenda, this trap, which is constantly putting the attention on ourselves.
So I can, I remember for many years when I started speaking that I would just be so jealous. I'd be so frustrated that other speakers were getting the engagements that I wanted. And it was very difficult for me to know how to think about that because God had definitely called me to be a speaker. And so I couldn't understand why he would, you know, do that. But I feel that, you know, pick somebody else instead of me. But I feel like what happened was at some point there came a leveling of the playing field where I understood that God was doing so much more than just what he was doing for me or wasn't doing for me, that this was such a bigger plan and that matching. Yeah. And how this comparison thing, like when you talk about the wisdom from below says, if I think I deserve it, if I think I've earned it, I should have it. Whereas the wisdom from above says, even if you have deserved it, even if those things are true, there is a God and he is orchestrating all things for all of eternity. And that's the wisdom from above. What are your thoughts there?
Well, and think of Jesus. You know, if there's anyone who's superior, it would be Jesus, right? He is the greatest being in the universe, outside the universe. He is the greatest of all. And yet he didn't come to earth trying to prove that he was greater than anyone else. Jesus humbled himself. He emptied himself out. Like that is the wisdom from above. The wisdom from above says, yeah, you know, I may have gifts and aptitudes and talents, but those aren't to lift me up. The purpose of giving me these gifts and these talents, they're intended to serve others. That's what Jesus did with all that he was and all of his potential. He took it and he emptied himself, Philippians 2 tells us. So, but Marnie, I just want to go back to your speaker thing because, have I ever fallen into that trap, right? And morning, I was having a conversation with another friend who's a speaker, and she was just sharing with me a little jealousy that she had towards someone else was given an opportunity that she wasn't given. And I was saying, you know, I've had the same thing. And we were kind of commiserating. But you know what we came to is we serve a person, not a position. Like we serve our Lord Jesus. And if he assigns us to a task, we joyfully say yes. But if he says, no, this isn't your turn, this is her turn, the freedom that comes from celebrating her turn. And look at the ways God has gifted her. And Marnie, as you know, I know you serve women all over the globe who are serving Jesus and speaking and using their gifts. And the beautiful thing is there is a platform for all of us. Like there is no shortage of opportunities to serve the Lord. Now, there may be a shortage of a platform where you're standing in front of 10,000 people, you know, but maybe that's not the assignment that God has given me. Maybe he has designed for me to serve the 7 women in my small group that I'm leading in a Bible study. You know, maybe that's his design for me. And the freedom, right, that comes from instead of measuring myself and comparing myself with the assignment, you know, that I think I should have or the one that she got, there's such joy and freedom and like this boost of confidence and just turning to the assignment that I know I've been given and emptying myself and lowering myself and humbling in humility, serving others and lifting them up just like Jesus did. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, right. There's a freedom in it, and there's also so much peace and joy in it to know that I'm doing exactly what God wants me to do instead of just I'm doing what I thought I was supposed to do. And and there's some, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, I always consider, you know, you think of a bottle of pop and it's got just that right amount of tension in it. It's got that right amount of fizz in it. And you shake it up, it's got too much, or you let it go flat, it's got too little. But when it's good, then it's got that right amount, or a tire, you know, the right amount of air pressure. And this this walking with God thing is kind of like that. It's like a tension, almost like a pressurized situation where it has the right amount of pressure when we're walking with God. But should we begin to compare too much, it's almost like it's shook up. The pressure is shook up in it. It makes us want to explode. It makes us feel crazy. But it's not because something's really wrong. It's because our eyes are off of the wisdom of God and onto the wisdom of, well, I like what you said here in James 3, the wisdom of Satan, actually. It's actually wisdom from below that's shaking us up, you know, and getting our eyes back on Jesus is always the right thing to do. You, in your book, you talk about women comparing themselves to others in the Bible. So we come by this kind of naturally. This is not something that we've devised in the 21st century.
Mm-mm, right. Yeah, it's been from the beginning, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I first kind of bumped into these comparison girls when I was writing Control Girl, and I was studying the lives of, you know, I remember studying Leah and Rachel and watching how these two sisters who shared the same husband, can you even imagine, how they were comparing themselves, and one was feeling superior and the other was feeling inferior. And I remember studying Sarah and Hagar, and, you know, Sarah was feeling inferior because she couldn't have a baby, and Hagar was feeling superior and kind of condescending, looking down. And again, when I studied Miriam, and she's measuring herself against Moses. And so this, you know, this measure up mindset, this has been with us from the beginning. And I love your analogy of the, you know, the pop or soda, if we have friends listening from a different region of the country. So soda is like, you know, that pressure, that angst, that frustration that you feel. I think maybe that can be a sign to us, like a dashboard indicator that,
oh yeah,
okay, we're falling back into this measure up agenda that, I mean, women have struggled with this from the beginning, and it does not lead anywhere good to fall back into that trap.
Right. Right. Yeah, it is a trap. And I think that's, instead of the comparison game, we should call it the comparison trap. That's really what it is.
Yeah. Or even the war.
Yeah. And I mean, the only
war, right?
Right. And the only person we're ever to compare ourselves with is Jesus, and not in a way to make us feel guilty, but in a way to make us feel excited that that's what God is conforming us into, is the image of Christ.
Right.
That, you know, the closer we get, the farther we see we are, but at the same time, the closer we get. And so it's just an exciting journey that way. So what is the solution then to comparing ourselves? If it isn't just stop comparing, what would be a response when I start feeling those thoughts in my head, when I start realizing, you know, I'm really feeling jealous, or I'm really feeling discontent with who I am?
Right. Well, you know, I think it's really interesting that Jesus never taught people to just stop comparing. You know, you would think if that was the answer, that as people are coming to Jesus and, you know, they're either plagued with jealousy, or they have this sense of condescension towards others, you know, the Pharisees, or they're feeling shame, you know, like the sinful woman. You would expect that if the answer was, you know, well, just stop comparing, that there would be some verse in the Bible where Jesus says, come follow me and I will teach you not to compare, right?
Right.
But instead, we see Jesus like almost inviting people to compare. So there are these stories and parables and stories and conversations where Jesus is comparing. Can you think of any examples, Marnie?
I think of the widow with her, you know, two mites compared to the Pharisees,
yes,
or the guys putting in their, you know, bags of gold.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So that's like a real life example. And here's this woman putting in two copper coins, and Jesus calls his disciples over and says, hey, look at her. You know, look at her. She's a great example for you. She has given more than the rest. So see that comparison word, right? Can you think of any other stories or examples?
Well, I don't know if it's what you're looking for, but I'm thinking of the four, the seeds that fall on the four kinds of ground. I mean, that's very much comparing what happens to these seeds for four very different responses.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Jesus is asking us, okay, compare yourself, find yourself in the story. Which soil are you? Are you the good soil, the open-hearted soil? Or are you the one who is, you know, trying to pursue wealth and status, you know, which one are you? And consistently, as Jesus tells these stories, he's almost inviting us to find ourselves, well, where do I fit? And to do that, we have to kind of compare, you know. So there's the story of the Good Samaritan, or the one about the wise and foolish builders, or, you know, the parable of the talents. I think that's one of my favorite examples, because if I was among the disciples listening to that story, Jesus could have told the story where they all, like, the master gave two talents to every one of his servants, but instead one gets five, one gets two, and one gets one. And these disciples, I mean, they're not foolish. They're looking at each other saying, all right, well, obviously Peter's the guy who, he's the five talent one in the story. You know, maybe James and John, they're the five. Well, which one am I, right? Which one am I?
No.
And it's almost like Jesus was inviting us to, like, there's a sense that we can compare in a way that's different than we compare in the world. And what Jesus consistently calls us to is what I call a me-free type of comparison. So if we're able to, like, what if I look at that parable of the talents and I say, you know what, as I look around at my sisters in ministry, I think I'm like maybe a three talent person. I don't have the capacity of this five talent person over here. And I don't have the limitations of this one talent friend over here. I think I'm kind of a three talent person. And how am I going to use those talents? And am I okay, can I live in a universe where some people have more than I do and others have been entrusted with less, and where I just humbly serve with what I've been given? And I love the end of that parable, because Jesus says to these, I love how the one with the five talents came back with 10, the one with the two talents came back with 4, mm-hmm. and Jesus said to both of them, well done, good and faithful servant. Mm-hmm. So our ability to serve the Lord, it does not have anything to do with how much we've been given. Like, look again at the widow with the two copper coins. She had given more than the rest. She gave sacrificially. And so it's a whole different economy in Jesus's kingdom. Jesus says that the greatest among us is the servant of all, and that whoever's first will be last, whoever's last will be first. Things are upside down in the kingdom, and to pursue, Jesus invites us to compare in this sort of upside down way, because he wants for us to have opportunity to pursue greatness in this kingdom. And it does not look like greatness the way greatness looks in the world. So he's constantly calling our attention to this different upside down way of comparing.
I love that. That is so good. What's coming to my mind is, you know, other stories in the Bible, like I think of the story of Elisha and the beggar, and then the rich man. And mm-hmm. There's three people with very different life scenarios. You've got the rich guy, you've got the poor guy, you've got the preacher guy, and they all had opportunity to love and trust God. And two of them chose to do that. One chose not to do that. And how, you know, it's consistently it's really a great thought process to just sit and think about this. I'm thinking about the widow that just had enough oil for one more meal for her and her little mm-hmm. son. So, so poor.
Yeah.
And she shared that, you know, so I think, yeah, I like your approach to this, how you're saying, instead of comparing with what other people have, we can look and we can see that there are differences, and then we go back and say, and what am I doing with what you've given me, or what are you doing through me with what you've given me? That's really, mm-hmm. it's really a beautiful, yeah. beautiful way to think about it.
Right. And, you know, when we watch Jesus explaining the kingdom, you know, he was always calling people to think about this kingdom that was coming and inviting them to the kingdom. He would tell, you know, the stories like you mentioned about Lazarus or these other stories, especially with the Pharisees. The people were constantly surprised with Jesus's conclusion, you know, because the ones that they thought of as great, like whether it's the wealthy person or the Pharisee, the really righteous person, that's not the way that Jesus ascribed greatness. His way was upside down. So he, remember the woman who was crying at Jesus's feet and she was breaking the flask of perfume on his feet. And here in the room is Simon, the Pharisee, who everybody thought of as the respected one. And Jesus like says to Simon, "Hey, I've got something to say to you." And then he elevates this woman. He's like, "Simon, you didn't even give me the customary greeting. You didn't kiss me. You didn't wash my feet. This woman has greeted me and she's honored me and she's displayed like this beautiful humility. She's, you know, feet in the Middle Eastern culture, that was just like the lowest part of you. Oh my goodness, to kiss someone's feet. This was very much, she was humbling herself and she's crying, she's weeping. And Jesus elevates that. He says, look at her humility. And that's a situation where Jesus tells one of these other little comparison stories. It's the story of two debtors where they both owe and they can't pay. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of like Jesus is putting Simon and the sinful woman in the same story side by side. And he's saying, you know, you're like her. You are a debtor and you cannot pay. And yet her debt was so much greater than yours. And yet it's forgiven. And look at her love. And so, you know, Jesus is constantly inviting us to look through the lens of heaven and recognize, you know, this sense of superiority that we have because of our self-righteousness, or maybe we have more money, or we're, you know, more successful. Like, we need to lay that aside, and we're invited to look at things the way Jesus does and the way that someday all of us will look at things this way, because we'll be in heaven and it will be a whole new value system. And so we're invited to look at things now the way we'll wish we would have then.
So what's the difference between living by the lines versus living by the spout?
Right. So this is a metaphor that I kind of used all through this Comparison Girl book. On the front cover, there's a measuring cup, one of those glass measuring cups, you know, with the red lines on the side, and it's pouring out. That's the image on the cover. And so what I'd love for our listeners to do is just to envision their life like a measuring cup. And inside the cup would be like all of the gifts and aptitudes and resources, everything that makes you, you, what's in your measuring cup. And, you know, it's your personality, your family background, all of the resources and aptitudes that you've been given. And here's what Satan wants you to do with your cup. He wants you to take your measuring cup and he wants you to put it next to somebody else's. And to measure yourself and to be completely absorbed with the lines on the outside of the cup. How do I measure up with her, you know, in regards to maybe my beauty or my righteous living or my serving? You know, even my serving is something that I can measure. How am I serving my family or how am I ministering to others? And so Satan wants to constantly, like, you know, Marnie, you were mentioning earlier, like, look at the other speaker, or maybe look at the other mom, or look at the other wife, and constantly be measuring ourselves against each other. But Jesus turns our attention to the spout. He says, you know, you were not designed to measure yourself against other people. You weren't given, whatever is in your measuring cup, it was not given to you so that you could take your cup and feel good about yourself because you have more, or feel intimidated and worthless because you have less. No, Jesus invites us to turn our attention to the spout. And if you think of that glass measuring cup and you picture it kind of tilted to one side and you picture yourself getting ready to pour that whatever in that measuring cup out, the lines are suddenly irrelevant. The lines don't matter anymore. When we're focused on pouring out what we've been given, We can't both be measuring and pouring at the same time. If we're pouring, we're not measuring. And so if we want to be free of this measure up mindset, this trap that our enemy constantly pulls us back into, what we can do is, hey, we need to start tipping our measuring cup. Look for ways that, you know, I know that I have this in my measuring cup. Right now, I have some extra money in my bank account. And just yesterday, I had an opportunity to send money to two different missionaries who are working with very, very poor people who are affected by this coronavirus. I just got word of these two different situations in two different continents, and I got to tip my measuring cup, and I got to pour out some extra. God didn't give me this extra money in my bank account so that I could feel superior to somebody else. You know, He gives more to some and less to others. And when we tip our measuring cup and pour, that's us saying, you know what, this is not a superiority thing. And there are plenty of others who could look at what's in my bank account and feel superior to me. I rest assured that that's true. But God didn't give them more so that they could feel superior to me. God gave us whatever is in our measuring cup, whether it's money or whether it's a gift or a resource or even a personality, a family background, anything that we can draw upon. God gave us these gifts so that we can serve each other, that we can pour out what we have. And when we do that, we find this new freedom and this confidence in, like, you know what, this is who I am. This is how God designed for me to live my life, to serve other people. And it gets my mind off of myself, and that's where the freedom comes.
I just love that. Just this morning, my daughter met me with her baby, or my granddaughter. They met me at a park that had two fountains, and the fountains were both beautiful. They were a little apart from each other. One fountain was in the sun, and it was coming up from the underneath and just going up through this thing, and then the water would come over the top and just make this big splash, beautiful down the sides. And the other fountain was completely in the shade. It was more like a waterfall in that it would tumble down the rocks into the pond at the bottom. And the fountains really couldn't have been much more different from each other, if you were going to say fountains. They were so different from each other, but each fountain accomplishing exactly the purpose for which the designer created it. And it's like we get this idea in our head that if we're not doing it a certain way, like someone else, that it's not successful. You know, these fountains, one sitting in the sun, the other in the shade, one's coming up from underneath, the other's coming down from the top. And they're so radically different, yet each accomplishing the beautiful purpose God created for it to do. I love this being poured out. And as soon as it's sideways, it doesn't matter anymore. Because the lines are irrelevant. That's so great. So what is the perspective that you would want us to have about the comparison trap?
Right. Well, I would love for us to find our freedom from that trap by looking around and asking, how can I serve someone today? Like, what if I could approach a room full of people with my little measuring cup in my hand? And what if, rather than stepping into that room and falling into traps left and right, like, measuring myself against this one over here and feeling inadequate and feeling like I have to posture or I have to project, you know, and build myself up, or looking over at this one on the other side and feeling like kind of looking down on them and wanting, you know, to distance myself because I'm superior to them in some way. Either way, those are traps, right? There's the trap of inadequacy and, feeling ashamed, a sense of shame and humiliation. That's completely me focused, right? Or then there's the trap of feeling greater than someone else and lifting myself up and always feeling superior. Well, that's a me focused trap as well. But what if instead of falling into these traps, what if I could approach a room full of people with my measuring cup tipped? And I walk into the room and I see, this person is, they're good at some of the same things that I am. In fact, they're actually better than I am. Maybe they're going to be better at leading in this direction. And that's great. I can celebrate that. And it's not my turn to tip my measuring cup and pour in that way. But maybe I have something in my measuring cup that this person over here needs. You know, maybe I'm an encourager, or maybe I'm someone with patience and I can listen to a long drawn out story, or maybe I'm somebody who can relate to a particular difficulty that they're going through. When I enter that room looking for ways to serve myself, there's just this new, like, freedom that comes from, and I'm not going to fall into that trap of inferiority or superiority when I have my measuring cup tipped. And I just want to point out one other thing that happens when we compare, Marnie. Have you ever noticed that either when you feel inferior to other people or you feel superior, that you just kind of want to pull away from them? Have you ever noticed that? You know, whenever we're comparing, we're not moving toward other people, we're moving away from them. So I picture, you know, a room full of people and they're all living by the lines and measuring. They're all kind of guarded, you know, and they're all like wanting to posture and make themselves look really great, but kind of hiding their inadequacies behind, you know, layers and worried about what people think. And there's just such, you know, they probably, if they enter the room focused on the lines and focus on how they're measuring themselves with others, they're probably going to leave the room feeling even less connected with each other than when they entered the room, right? Mm-hmm. But if we can enter a room where we're all pouring and receiving, and where we're really not posturing and measuring ourselves against each other, picture being able to leave that room having engaged with other people who are different and may have different gifts, and receiving their gifts and saying, oh, well, let me pour some into your cup of this is a gift that I have to give. And we're like kind of, we all are forming this little cluster in the middle of the room rather than pulling aside to the corners of the room. We're together and we're each pouring and receiving. That's what unity looks like in the Church of Jesus Christ. Unity is not forged out of uniformity. It's actually forged out of our differences. You know, when you
right.
have something, yeah, you have something I don't have, I have something you don't have, and we can come and meet in the middle, and we've all been given something to share in the church. What a beautiful picture of unity when people who are not alike can come together and give each other kind of this place to belong, right? Saying, oh, she's the one who brings this, and she's the one who brings this, and he brings this gift, and we all need each other. That's what the church was designed to be like. So that's, I feel like there's just this freedom. It's both, we avoid the trap of comparison, but we also find this freedom and confidence when we focus on how can I serve? How can I get my eyes off of myself and serve somebody else?
I just love it. I love it. What is the disgust factor challenge? I love the name of that, the disgust factor challenge.
Right. So, you know, disgust is one of those sins that even the godliest women among us feels comfortable looking over, like, you know, looking over at some other person and saying, I would never do that. Oh, my goodness, can you believe? You know, have you ever noticed that, Marnie, in our Christian circles? Mm-hmm. Like, disgust is sort of one of those things that it's like one of those Jerry Bridges calls respectable sins. Like, we don't think of people as really sinful when they're disgusted with each other. But what I've noticed is like, when I have this this feeling of inadequacy, it's like what my heart wants when I feel less than, what my heart wants is superiority. It's like I crave, like, okay, if I feel less than in this area, well, I want to prove that I'm more than or greater than in some other area. It's like I kind of want to balance things out. And so, it's, you know, it's really ugly to admit, but intuitively, I seek out people that I can look down upon. It kind of makes me feel good, right? And then when I find them, it just gives me this sense of gratification to voice my disgust, you know? So, oh, I'm disgusted with those people over there who cheat on their spouses, or I'm disgusted with, you know, dirty politicians, or I'm disgusted with my neighbor who obviously is living outside of her means, or, you know, just all these different ways that I look down on other people. And in his book of called Christians in the Age of Outrage, Ed Stetzer just taught me so much about disgust and how disgust is really, it's not just saying something about this other person. He says we can't feel disgust without communicating an opinion about ourselves in the process. So we can't, you know, I can't be like, oh, I'm so disgusted with her. Look, I have this condescension and I'm looking down on someone else, but I'm also elevating myself in the same breath, right? And so I just started noticing that when I was writing this comparison girl book and thinking about all of the ways that we compare ourselves. So I invited some friends to do what I call a disgust factor challenge. And so for 3 weeks, we just kind of were looking for any signs of disgust, you know, maybe in our hearts or in our tones or on our faces, right, as we looked over at other people. And we were all very surprised at how much it was there, how much and sometimes our disgust was based on some arbitrary difference, you know, something like somebody's manners, right? The way that they, you know, oh, she didn't even greet me, or, you know, or maybe like it's a parenting style. Oh, I can't believe they let their kids run wild, or even like a spouse's decision to take the back roads instead of the highway, right? And so, and we saw, like, we were constantly feeling disgusted at people for something that really, you know, it's just a choice. There's nothing superior or inferior about these choices. They're just differences. And then other times we noticed that our disgust was associated with some sort of, like, self-righteousness. You know, we're looking over at somebody because of their sin, and we're saying, you know, I would never, I could never, I have never, you know, and we're looking down at others, but we're also in the same breath, like we're communicating an opinion about ourselves that we are superior. And yet there's an irony to that, because when we're looking down in condescension on someone else, aren't we sinning just in a different way? Isn't this just our ugly pride showing itself, right? And so it's just that there's this irony with our disgust when we're, the moment that we're looking over at somebody else with disgust, we are just sinning in a different way. And our disgust, whether it's over differences or over sin, it's completely out of place in a group of people whose unity is formed by the cross, right?
You know, I love you.
Right, thinking of that woman, that sinful woman crying at Jesus' feet. And Simon, you know, we don't know if he was a follower of Jesus or became a follower of Jesus, but how inappropriate for any follower of Jesus to look at somebody else and look at, you know, look down on them in disgust because of sin, because we're exactly in the same situation. We're sinners too. And right. It's very inappropriate for us to look at another person's sin or another person's differences with a sense of disgust. And so we need to, I think, especially as Christian women who've been around the church for a while, we need to weed out these little seeds and these little attitudes that we have of disgust toward other people, because Jesus welcomes these other people. Jesus looks at the woman at his feet and he lifts her up and he says her humility is beautiful. And so we need to adopt Jesus's mindset and weed out the disgust.
I want us to redefine the word disgust a little bit. So I'm going to give you a moment to think about a few other words you can help me with that one. Disgust doesn't really work for me. And I remember being in a conference one time and he was saying, you know, you needed to release your bitterness that you're holding against people. And I kept thinking, I don't have any bitterness. I just don't have any bitterness. And then he just further described it as, you know, feelings like you still feel bad about something. You're still feeling hurt about something that happened a long time ago. And I was like, that's bitterness. Wow. Okay. I've got some of that. Like with disgust, I feel like that's a word that I don't understand in my own brain. I don't see that. But okay. Earlier today, and I'm just going to confess this here publicly, in hopes of mercy from God. My husband asked me about my earbuds, and I've gotten some of those that don't have a cord on them. I've gotten some that you just, the little ones that you just stick right in your ears, you know, and they don't have a cord. And boy, I've just loved those, but I keep feeling like, oh my goodness, I'm afraid I'm going to lose them, you know, because they're very small. There's not this big cord dangling everywhere.
Right, yeah.
And so I've been concerned I was going to lose them. So this morning he asked how I was liking them, and he was thinking of getting a pair. And my judgmental mind said, oh, I hope you don't, because you're just going to lose them. You know, I know you're going to lose them. And I didn't say it out loud, but I surely had that thought. Well, don't you know, Shannon, that today I have lost one of mine. And
oh, no.
And I know that. I know that it's a consequence of pride, in that, you know, why would I not want him to have something good, because he might do the exact thing that I might do? You know, why did I hear what you're saying, and the word disgust, I didn't feel at all disgusted toward him, but there was something there, you know, there was some judgmental something that made me feel like I was a little bit better than him, you know?
Yeah,
and I don't know.
Yes.
What are some other words we can use besides disgust?
Well, maybe condescension, or you know, really judgmental. Just looking down on someone because they're. My friend Cindy Bolton says, "Let's not look down on someone because they sin differently than we do." And you know, the example with your husband's headphones, like. That I wouldn't categorize that as sin, you know. Maybe he just loses things more easily. I am the one who loses things. I'm not falling into sin. I'm just losing things. And my kids constantly are calling out the fact that I forget things. You know, mind, my brain is just so full. It's like things are spilling out, and. And so whether it's a right and wrong thing, or whether it's just a, you know, God made me different. He didn't give me this capacity to remember all of the details. I am constantly forgetting details. But what a beautiful place where a family or a church or a community can, we have grace for each other, and
right.
We recognize, like, you know, you're different than me. And I have, there are ways that God has gifted me in a way that he hasn't gifted you. And you know what? I can just help you. I can help you with my gifts, and you can help me with your gifts. And let's just weed out this sense of superiority and condescension.
Yeah. And like for me, I really do feel like God wanted to draw something to my attention there, where I was willing to accept the grace that he was giving me to not be losing my earbuds, but I wasn't willing to extend that kind of love and grace to my husband, because that would be different than me. You know, and we make these distinctions in our head that God isn't making, that we're making, but God is not making those distinctions. And I think that we just need to be really careful about those judgments that we're making, and go back to, is what I'm thinking, is what I'm saying, is what I'm doing motivated by the love of Jesus Christ? Or is there something else here?
Right. Well, and I think too, like, remembering that God looks at the heart,
right?
That God, He measures our hearts. And, you know, there's a story that I included in Comparison Girl about a 10th grade girl who had, her family had moved to a new church, and she was attending a youth retreat. It was just like a couple months after they had started going to this church, and they were going on a canoe trip, and she came out of the bathroom wearing a bikini, and immediately she noticed the way that all the other girls who were wearing one piece bathing suits, they all started glancing at her with like disapproval. And they were kind of, she just had sensed it, you know? And so this girl, she had never known that it was wrong. At her last church, everyone wore bikinis, But suddenly she's at this new church, and it's wrong. It's very clearly wrong. And she spent the whole day feeling self-conscious and uncomfortable and worrying about how she was fitting in. And when she got home, she's like, Mom, we have to buy a one-piece swimsuit. I think it's really bad to wear a two-piece swimsuit. And so, like, you know, when I think about this situation and what this girl encountered, here's a girl, she loved Jesus. And she was not going to that retreat. If she had known that others were going to be offended, there's no way she would have worn that. You know, immediately she wanted to conform. She wanted to do what was pleasing and right, you know, in this group. And she had not come with any sense of, you know, trying a superiority, like, look at me, I'm wearing a two-piece. But and these girls, no doubt, they were trying to honor Jesus and their parents with their modesty. But sometimes I think we miss the point. You know, right. Instead of, like, trying to choose good behavior like modesty, or we use our modesty like a measuring stick, or we use our good behavior in some other way like a measuring stick, and it gives us this cause for looking down on other people with judgment. And, you know, maybe disgust is too strong of a word sometimes, but maybe sometimes it isn't. You know, when we look at somebody else who, we pretend that we can sit in the judge's seat and that it's a good place for us, we're in dangerous footing there. It is not our place to judge other people. And I'm not saying anything right or wrong about bikinis. I'm just saying that we have to be really careful about casting judgment and weighing motives, and especially when we're using our own list of, you know, right and wrong. There is no verse that I can find about bikinis in the Bible. You know, we're all trying to do our best, right, to live in a way that pleases the Lord. And so, yeah, we just have to be really careful about expressing And the thing that Jesus did explicitly warn against was judging and looking down on other people. That is in the Bible. You know, we can find verses about that. And so that's, if we are looking in condescension at other people,
right,
we need to really weigh our hearts and our motives in those situations.
Tell us about flipping the ruler. What is that?
Well, that kind of has to do with the same thing, you know, judging other people and looking down on them. You know, Jesus talked about the specks and the logs, you know, if you have a speck in your eye or a log in your eye, and he's comparing, right? Specks are tiny. And so if you are trying to measure a speck, you would lean in with a ruler, like a teeny millimeter side of your ruler, right? And logs are large. And so if you were trying to measure a log, you would flip your ruler around and you know, measure by the foot, you know, or measure by a yardstick, right? And those of us who tend, and I put myself in this category, Marnie, it sounds like you have the sweeter, more gracious attitude, but I tend to be someone who judges and I'm critical of other people. But here's the thing. When I am, like, you know, looking at these little specks in other people, you know, I'm measuring by the millimeter. I'm looking, well, look at that. And look at how they did that. And look at, you know, I am using this disgust or this judgment that is long-sized in God's eyes, you know. So, yes, they might have something wrong with them, but here I am, you know, looking down with this pride and arrogance and condescension, and that's like measure by the foot kind of sin. And you know, so we tend to magnify the flaws of others and we minimize our own. We have this hypercritical judgment of other people, and then we're the ones with the bigger problem. So by flipping your ruler, you know, kind of the principle is, if you're just so invested in finding the flaws in other people, if you're somebody who nitpicks, you know, maybe it is like your husband's losing things all the time, or your kid, you know, it's the way he dresses or the way he eats, or it's some other way that you're being critical of some other people. The principle is, like, okay, let's take the ruler and say, you know, this is such a small thing. Look at how tiny it is. And look at how big my arrogance is when I look down in judgment on this other person. That's what Jesus invites us to, is like, let's look at the bigger picture of, from God's perspective, you know, what's tiny and what's big, and our arrogance and our pride and our judgment, that is always the big thing to consider. That's always the log-sized thing that's sticking out of our eye, blinding us, really.
My mind goes right to crawling up on the cross with Jesus, you know, just what he did for us is so humongous, just so always everything that someone else could do against us. I mean, that's kind of like, he has forgiven me so much. And then, you know, it's back to like the story you mentioned earlier of the two men who both owed debts and the very different ways in which they went about processing that, and how when someone else has done something that we felt disgusted by, or just even hurt by, or whatever you want to use the word, just to compare that with how I have hurt Jesus, how my sin caused his death. And that always puts it into perspective for me. Just like, wow, it is so crazy for me to be holding a grudge, to be petty, like the speck in someone's eyes, to be petty like that when God is so graciously forgiven me. In fact, you know, this losing of the little earbud, it was kind of a funny thing. Like, stuff like this doesn't happen to me all the time when I just barely have a thought, and then bam, God just shows me something very clear, how it's just purely grace that I haven't lost them before now. I mean, they're very small and they're easy to lose. And it's just been, today it's just been kind of in my face, just this amazing ability that we have to judge and compare. I mean, I'm sure it was because we were having this interview this afternoon that I came today. That I needed the reminder that yes, you do this. You actually struggle with
well,
it.
And, I hope you find them, Marnie. I hope
by the grace of God, either I will or I won't, and either way, benefit will come to me because I've yielded it to God now. So that's what I believe. I believe that God uses everything for our good, even our own failures, even our own weaknesses. Yes. God can use those for good just as much, just equally as much as our successes, the things we would define as a success, you know, holding on to those earbuds for all these, you know. God can use both just as much, and maybe just sharing it here publicly is what the benefit is. And I never see that earbud again, which is fine too. But I do hope that. How do we live on the healthy side of both pride and comparison? And I just have to warn you, Shannon, you've got about 3 minutes here.
Okay. Well, I think that, you know, to live on the healthy side would be what, using that metaphor again, focusing on the spout, right? Comparing with, you know, it's fine to glance side to side and look at the differences in other people. And it's fine to have a healthy pride. And, you know, this is what's in my measuring cup. And this is what God has given me to share with the world. Like, there's something really great about that. We want for our kids to have that kind of confidence. And we want that for ourselves too. But living on the healthy side would be, okay, yes, but whatever is in my measuring cup, it's intended that I might serve the world. How can I tip this measuring cup, and rather than focusing on how do I measure up and, you know, my either my pride of how I'm better than someone else, or my you know, it can be like an upside down pride when I feel so worthless because I'm not as good as someone else. Both of those are kind of in the same category of pride. But instead, if I can just say, you know what, I've been given what I've been given, and I'm good with that. You know, maybe I'm a three-talent person, or I'm a two-talent person, and I just want to use whatever I have been given. I want to invest it for the kingdom, and I want to serve my Lord Jesus. I want to be like him. I want to empty my life out. That is the path that leads to freedom from this trap or this war zone of comparison.
I love that. I love your me free living. And I was thinking about how often I say to people, I am just so proud of you. And where that comes from is I believe it comes from like God's heart when he looks at us mm-hmm. as his children.
Yeah.
And when we're using one of the gifts or talents that he has given us, he's just so proud of us. He is just like a papa bursting at his seams. He just loves it. And that feeling actually comes from God. That pride, that comparison mm-hmm. there, that comes
yes.
from God. It's like he's just yes. so delighted. And then when mm-hmm. we go into this space with many people, and let's even say many talented people in this space, and we are comparing and we're looking, instead of being like, I don't measure up or I'm better than her, this joining in with God's heart and saying, look what God has done through her life.
Yes.
Look at the trials that she has overcome in order to mm-hmm. have the platform she has now. Or, you know, and I think that as we just stay in the presence of God and look through the eyes of Jesus at the people around us, that this is what his heart is, that we would, like you say, in this healthy way, compare and be delighted with the mm-hmm. difference
yes.
that God has
yes,
created
yes.
in us.
We can move toward each other and celebrate rather than feeling, you know,
yes.
pulling away from each other. We can move, say, wow, look at the way God designed you. If I move toward you, Marnie, with my measuring cup tilted, wanting to come and engage with you and share what I have and receive what you have, I'm able to look at you and not compare myself with you, but just celebrate. Wow, look at
right.
the beautiful woman that God has designed you to be. I love seeing you use your gifts, and I want to cheer for you. I want to celebrate the good work that God did when he designed you. And you can in turn celebrate the good work that God did when he designed me. And we give each other this community and this place to belong.
Absolutely. Well, this hour has flown by. Shannon, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You guys want to go check out her website at shannonpopkin.com. Shannon, when they get over there, what are they going to find?
I would actually say it might be easier to go to comparisongirl.com. And,
okay.
and you know, you can find that from my website. But comparisongirl.com will tell you just the different resources that we have. The Comparison Girl book is a Bible study. And there is a companion journal that you can pick up to go with that. And there's a video teaching series. And we would love for you to just gather some friends, some women, and talk through what does Jesus want me to know about this thing with comparison, and how did he respond to people who were comparing, and what can I learn from that? We'd love for you to find out the different resources we have.
Fantastic. Well, once again, thank you so much for being here. It's been fun to have you back again, and I always love
you, Marnie.
You love what you what God's doing through you.
You too. Thank you so much.
All right. And thanks, you guys, for being here. So delighted to have you with us when we do these shows live on Wednesday afternoons of Blog Talk Radio, as well as to those who listen later and around the web, and to those who host us and to our syndicates. We're just expanding our syndication right now. More coming on that shortly now. Also, I want to just encourage you to check out the YouTube station now. And it's still a little hard to find. We're working on this with the COVID-19. It's not, we don't get our title yet. So you have to go to YouTube and search my name, Marnie Swedberg, or else Marnie's Friends, and you'll be able to find the YouTube channel over there. But we're putting some of these radio shows over there, starting to do that now, as well as increasing the syndication, which is really fun. So happy to have you along and to share my life as well as what God is teaching me through our guests. And we'll share this program with someone you love who might feel encouraged by enjoying it as well. Thanks so much for being here. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll see you next time at Perspective Transformation with Marnie's Friends. And bye-bye.